Senate Education Committee, February 26, 2018. We have a work session up for a bill that we had last week that we're going to have as our first order of business, House Bill 4036A. So we're going to open a work session on House Bill 4036A. And it's a work session, so I want to invite Representative McLean up to talk a little about this bill, because all of our members were excited to hear you speak last week.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Mike McLean. I represent District 55 in the House. I was chief sponsor of, still am, of House Bill 4036. But I understand you have some questions. Happy to answer them to serve the committee.
Okay, we can start with that way. Is there anybody? Last week we had a conversation, and we didn't have anybody other than myself and a couple of people just to speak back and forth. And so the questions came up about the cost, why now, why the middle school kids as opposed to where it was before, what prompted it. So I guess that's, since you're the chief sponsor, we'll let you answer some of those questions about. And for those who don't understand, this is, you want to give a short explanation of what this bill does, so since we're having some testimony.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, House Bill 4036A modifies the definition of interscholastic activities for the purposes of homeschooled and charter school student participation in school district activities, specifying that the existing definition of athletics, music, speech, and similar or related activities applies to students in any grade from kindergarten through grade 12, and adding that activities from kindergarten through grade 8 offered before or after school may but are not required to involve interaction among other schools. The bill clarifies the current interpretation and practice that fees are required on an annual basis, and that charter schools pay up to 5% of the school district's general purpose grant weighted average daily membership to participate in the activity, and an additional 5% if the student enrolls in a course for credit. The bill clarifies current interpretation and practice that a public charter school pay a fee once per year per student, regardless of the number of activities, if a school district or school requires payment. The bill requires a student attending a public charter school be allowed to participate in the same manner as a resident of the school district, prevents school districts from prioritizing residents of a district, but requires students satisfy any standards for participation. The bill requires those activities available to non-charter public school students be available to charter school and homeschool students. Declares an emergency effective on passage.
Chair Roblin and members of the committee, I appreciate the good work you did 2017 for Senate Bill 208. We had a corollary bill in the House that I chief sponsored, and as is often the case, the House version was scrapped for the Senate version. But the goal of it was to, in essence, establish an overriding principle that public school kids, regardless of the school they attend, whether it's a charter school or a neighborhood school, should be on equal footing when it comes to sports and extracurricular activities. Now, in that, the discussion was about high school. We had a young woman in Medford who was the 3A reigning champion in golf, and she attended a charter school and her senior year and was not able to defend her title, and there was a growing other anecdotal evidence. There wasn't certainly systemic problems, but there was a growing issue about, are these students of ours, public school students, on equal footing? And I believe that the principle we established in Senate Bill 208 was, the answer was to that was yes. Now, there are many families, including myself, where you have children of different learning capabilities who, in the seven intelligences, some are stronger in their areas. So what that means is that not every kid is a classroom learner. They learn tactile, perhaps. They learn in different settings. So charter schools provide public schools with the ability to offer different ways in which kids can learn. And that debate, of course, we had years ago and is established. Now, I've seen myself, being a father of three children, a charter school out of Redmond called Redmond Proficiency Academy, serve one of my kids in an amazing way. And I am a huge fan of RPA. So I was an advocate based upon my district being clear down to Medford area, and then also my personal experience, which said, hey, look, kids in our public school system, whether they be charter school or neighborhood school, deserve equal footing. So that's the history of 208. Now, what happened was we had a younger, it looks Oak Hills Elementary, went to apply 208, Centerville 208, and I thought the district got it wrong. Beaverton School District, and in an article in the Oregonian, Maureen Wheeler, a public communications officer for the school district, told a reporter that interscholastic activities are only those governed by the Oregon School Activities Association, and since choir wasn't, they had no obligation to permit a student, Ben, to join, a charter school student to join a choir. Now, when you, again, it's equal footing. So a charter school kid doesn't get preference. A charter school kid just cannot be discriminated against because they learn in a charter school environment. Now, maybe parents put kids in charter schools for different motives and different reasons. But we just know this. The child didn't choose. The child is placed in a charter school. And the question is whether that child in the charter school should have equal footing as those in a neighborhood public school. I believe the answer is yes. And what we exposed in the 208 is that there was perhaps confusion. And the confusion is, does this apply to non-OSA regulated activities? And the answer, I believe, should be yes, it does. And if there is confusion, then House Bill 4036 will alleviate that confusion. That's all it does. This is not the most important bill in 2018. It's certainly important to Ben and his family. His mom has emailed us, and Cinda Machuca has emailed and supports the bill, and they basically articulate what many others articulate as a position of a family with a child in a public school, a public charter school, and that is, we want our children on equal footing. So some would argue, well, it gives them preferential. No, it doesn't. It just means if you have 20 spots in choir and maybe you have 40 kids apply, well, they all apply together. So it's just equal footing. So the question then becomes for this committee, and the House found 50 yays and 8 nays, that we want our kids on equal footing. So should it apply beyond OSA regulated? I believe it should. It's trying to interpret a previously passed bill, Senate Bill 208, to say that to the extent you read that Senate bill from 2017 as limiting to just OSAA regulated, we're being clear that it's not. Now, there may be additional questions. That's a history. I'm happy to answer additional questions. That's a history of this bill, the limited scope of this, of what we're trying to do, and affirming the principle that I asked this committee to support, and that is, there is no systemic discrimination in Oregon against our public school kids. They get to participate fully, and so they get to succeed or fail like any other kid playing a sport or in an extracurricular activity. I understand that there was concerns that while in elementary school, it's a little bit different than high school. I believe that the amendments have brought that concern to a close, and that the support of COSA and I can't speak for the School Board Association. I can't remember if they eventually came around to support the bill, but I think we got it fixed. So again, Mr. Chair, that's what all this does.
Any other questions? Senator Denbrough.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and Representative, thanks for coming. I had some questions last time that had to do with, well, first of all, I mean, you've been talking about public school kids, but this also applies to homeschool kids, right? And I wonder if you could speak to that.
Yes. The children at issue in the respective cases were charter school. And the Senate Bill 208 expanded that, I believe, to homeschool when it came to OSAA. And so, and they applied a principle which was believed to have been in effect in Oregon, which was that a homeschool child would not be treated different, and that the neighborhood public school was open to that homeschool child. And so I believe the language of 208 did include homeschool with regards to OSAA. Therefore, House Bill 4036 would make that open with regards to homeschool elementary school kids. But I don't believe the facts, we don't have any information that I know of homeschool kids being treated disparate. Our only information is based upon charter school kids.
Okay, let me just follow up.
Yep.
And I have no problem with giving homeschool kids access. I think it's great to have them in different ways being socialized with peers. But where I think things get tricky, and we sort of touched on this last week, is when it starts involving ADMW. And the bill, as I understand it, allows the receiving school to charge up to 5% ADMW to the charter school. And that's where I think things start getting complicated, as is often the case once money is involved. You know, if we were just talking about, let's say, an activity that an outside group was offering at the school at no charge, I don't think we'd have a problem. But, you know, when you start then having to transfer ADMW from one school to another, and, you know, the question is, does the charter school have a say if one of their students decides to, you know, to do choir at a regular public school, and they're going to have to then send some of their ADMW over with that student? You know, what is the process then for that happening? Do they have a say in the matter? And I'm just wondering if, for example, in the case that you're talking about, the case in, was it Hillsborough or Beaverton, if the charter, the young person's charter school had any issues with sending ADMW with that student. It just seems like there's still some questions out there about how to implement this that weren't answered on last week. And so, you know, therefore, it seems to me that there's still work to be done on this bill.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Denbrough, I have often said that on bills in the House. So I feel your pain. But I do believe that there is a, this House Bill 4036 would affirm that we leave it to the district to work out with the charter school. I default in favor of the kid. I know that, you know, the grown-ups have to work out details. I do think a school district like Beaverton, in what I think the vast majority of school districts do, is they they don't want to charge the charter school. And I believe 4036 would say, look, it's up to you. You can do this if you want, as far as charging ADM and working that stuff out. But that the principle we're affirming is that we don't want our kids discriminated based upon where they have to, where they're placed in a learning environment. Because, you know, a lot of the charter schools are appealing to kids who learn differently. That was my experience and my experience of my son. And I have two sons and a daughter. Is that, boy, you put him in the right environment and he absolutely blossomed. But the right environment didn't look like the neighborhood school. Jacob used to say, I have ants in my pants. But you know what? When we found an environment where he didn't have to be in a chair for long periods of times and was more tactile and stuff, he prospered. So I'm looking out for people like our family. And I also, I'll admit, I was ticked at the Medford School District for what I thought was creating disincentives to attend charter schools, which was you can't play sports at the neighborhood school if you attend a charter school. And I think that was wrong. So that's a long way to say I don't disagree with you, that maybe it's not perfect. It probably isn't. But I just think we've got to affirm that principle. 208 established it, or at least gave voice to it, what I think we all agreed on as far as the principle. House Bill 4036 comes right back the next year and says, no, doggone it, we mean it. Put these kids on equal footing. And that's my hope.
Any other questions? Yes.
Thank you, Rep. McLean. It seems to me that the equal footing narrative is very, very powerful because the local charter school is a local neighborhood public school. There is, technically, there's no difference other than they have a different charter. Does 4036 have any reporting requirements? For example, we don't really know how many students will take advantage of interscholastic sports. We don't know what the cost is. We don't know what the cost is per type of class. How much is it for choir? How much is it for football? How much is it for any number of arenas where the public school, the non-charter public school might have a before school or after school program, and the charter public school doesn't have that program. Their funding in terms of ADM money is already 80% is going to pay for this. The other 20% is being kept. To add another 5% on top of that is sounds like it's economically feasible, but we don't know what the numbers are. So I'm sorry, I don't know details with regard to reporting requirements that are also included in 4036. And I'd suggest even if there aren't voting or reporting requirements, that school districts would be keen on analyzing and understanding the numbers, the costs, the number of students involved, et cetera.
Chair Roblin and Senator Lithencombe, I don't believe there is a reporting requirement. But we could probably do an informal one where we in that tall guy in the back, Hugh Addy, has been working on this, and I'll commit that he will he'll do his best to call people and try to get that information informally. But I don't think we have it. And the goal of 4036 is to say 208 says what it said. We're affirming the principle. Number two, it goes beyond OSAA sports. It's equal footing. And number three, you're going to work this out. And it may be case by case. But we meant what we said.
Thank you.
Oh, yes.
Mr. Chair, this is...
Senator Benson and Senator Hess.
This is just to clarify something that was just said by Senator Lithgow. I just might point out that, as I mentioned last week, the 20% applies, I think, to certain charter schools that are not, that are sponsored by the district. That's not the case when the charter school is sponsored by the state. I think it's 10% there. I just want to make sure the record's clear as to that distinction.
Mr. Hess first, and then I'll come back
okay.
to you. Okay, Senator Hess.
Thank you. Representative, I too support this overall principle of equal footing. And I guess I was just, you know, in the case of Beaverton, which is my district, you know, where this sort of reached a tipping point, you know, they didn't have any choice. When I first heard this, I was like, just let them join the choir. How expensive could that be? But really, they can't just be willy-nilly with laws that are already set up, and this is the previous. Well, then and if it's choir, then the next thing it's, you know, a science lab, and it's, you know, they had to follow, take this course. And I was just wondering if you were confident in, or how confident you are in the mechanism in here with the rules and the fees and the ADMW, that this is the right way to do this to guarantee that principle.
Chairman Roblin and Senator Hass, I'm highly confident, but, you know, this certainly won't be the last bill. Eventually, you know, someone's going to figure out either intentionally or unintentionally, they're going to expose where this does not solve a problem, or someone's going to use it in a way to be antagonistic. Or there's going, you know what, there may be a family which raises their hand someday and says, hey, Senate Bill 208 and its progeny, you know, House Bill 4036 gives us the right to have a parking spot on your, you know, like every other kid. And we're going to say, no, it doesn't extend to parking spots, or it doesn't extend to booster club, you know, muffin day or whatever, you know. But in meaning there is a line. This probably isn't the last time we have to come in and do it, unfortunately. And when it comes to education, you know, this is hard. So I want to, you know, you're the chairman of revenue. Isn't revenue supposed to be like clear? And based on what I see coming from the Senate, it's anything but. So I think when it comes to education, we're going to have to show a little patience as we roll this out. That's the best I can offer.
Sorry with them.
Just for clarification purposes, and I agree, a little bit of patience. This is almost like a pilot. Let's gather some data and figure out what it looks like. So that's a great answer. And then Chair Roblin and Senator Bentz, with regard to state-sponsored versus district-sponsored, how many of each? What's the quantity of those? Under a half a dozen state-sponsored and all the rest are district-sponsored, or... How's that way out? And do we know real numbers?
I think it's something like that.
I actually do have the answer.
Oh, do you? Oh, very good. Sure. I'll go to the person who has the answer.
There are four state-sponsored.
And how many district-sponsored?
I know the answer.
Well, the ratio's very drastically different. So the handful of state sponsors at 10% are very small compared to the vast quantity at the 20%.
There is at least one online charter school that doesn't pay their district anything.
Okay.
They take all the money, they pass it through. So that's left up to the individual school districts to negotiate with their charter school. So it
right.
varies from place to place. Okay. Any other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So I will entertain a motion.
Chair Roblin, I will gladly move House Bill 4036A to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Senator Lithgow moves House Bill 4036A to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Any other discussion? Senator?
I'm just going to say, Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm going to be a no on this, not because I at all disagree with the goal. You know, I think that I would really like to see us as a state work this out, but I just see that this is going to lead to all sorts of confusion for the next year that's unnecessary. I mean, I wish something could be worked out for this one kid, but for us to pass a bill to deal with one kid seems kind of crazy. If I think much better would be to take the next year and come up with something that actually gets these questions answered. What happens if the receiving district sets a price and the charter school disagrees? Does the kid, who prevails there, the parent, the charter? I don't know, there are just a lot of questions that I think need to be worked out. Though I will say again, the goal of you know, inclusion to the extent possible, I think is an admirable one.
Any other discussion? With that, we'll do a roll call vote.
Senator Benz.
Aye.
Senator Dan Brown.
No.
Senator Gelser.
Yes.
Senator Hass.
No.
Senator Thompson.
Aye.
Vice Chairman Bickham.
Yes.
Chair Rowland.
Yes. So the bill passes, and it's on its way to the floor. We're going to have, maybe I'll co-carry with you.
Sure.
Senator Lithicum and I will carry the bill. We'll close the work session on 4036A. Because of the lack of time, and a reminder that today is the last day the Senate Education Committee can continue its work for this session, and because the deadlines are up. So we're going to do some stuff that expedites a little bit because of looking at the number of bills we have. So one of the bills, the next one, I apologize for all the people who are here. We are going to take a motion, open a work session on House Bill 4013A. And I'm going to take a motion to move that to rules so that it can be continued to be studied. I will escort it there personally. I will be there as well. So,
okay.
Senator Lithicum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Roblin, I would like to move House Bill 4013-A without recommendation back to the Senate President for re-referral to another committee.
And so Senator Lithicum moves House Bill 4013-A without recommendation back to the Senate President for re-referral to another committee, which I expect to be rules because I have talked to them about that. So it'll be alive. So is there any discussion about that motion? Seeing none, is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, it so moves. And for those that came, I apologize for that. But at the time that we were having the conversations, it was a decision had to be made quickly. So that's where it is right now. Back to rules. With that, we'll close the public the work session on 4013A, and we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 4150A. And with that, we'll have a short explanation and we'll call up some people.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, House Bill 4150A expands the information provided in student sexual harassment complaints. The bill specifies that school district policies include disclosure to students, parents, and staff members as appropriate, whether a violation of policy was found, to the extent allowed under state and federal confidentiality laws. The bill extends protections in school district policies to persons on or immediately adjacent to school properties, at school-sponsored events, utilizing school transportation, or at school bus stops. It requires written notification to include sections detailing the rights of students or staff members who filed the complaint and information on legal and disciplinary options, school services, outside services, and privacy rights. The bill specifies that the notice must be in plain language that is easy to understand, and it takes effect July 1st, 2018.
Okay, so with that, we will bring up Representative Salinas, Senator Wagner, Senator Gelser. You want to go up there or stay here?
I can stay here.
Okay, then we can bring up one more.
Representative, yes, of course.
That works. That'll get all of our people up here. Okay.
Chair Roblin, Vice Chair Lithicum, members of the Senate Committee on Education. For the record, my name is Andrea Salinas. I'm the representative for House District 38, Lake Oswego, and Southwest Portland. The reason I brought HB 4150 forward is because too many children experience sexual harassment in our K-12 public schools and school settings. Frequently, when a sexual harassment case occurs, victims and their parents prefer to resolve the issue through a school district investigation rather than seeking legal recourse in order to avoid additional conflict in a tight-knit school community. Victims and their parents seek relief from the harassment and information on what steps to take to protect themselves. However, few schools at this point are equipped to handle these investigations without leaving families with questions and confusion. Families face problems of knowing what to expect from the investigation process and being provided with enough information to know whether or not the victim will be kept safe and free from future harassment by the perpetrator. Thus, a group made up of victims' rights and sexual harassment advocates, school groups, and student organizations have come to the table to figure out what could be done in the short session to address this problem. We've taken the good work the legislature passed in 2015 with Senate Bill 759, which provides for a roadmap for investigations at the college campus level, and asks the legislature to put a similar roadmap in place for our K-12 schools by passing House Bill 4150A. The roadmap requires the schools to take specific steps to provide some information to the victims while remaining compliant with federal and state confidentiality laws. Any student who brings a harassment complaint to the school for an investigation will be provided with the following: the rights of the victim, information of the school district's complaint process, notice of possible legal remedies outside of the school's jurisdiction, and that there may be statute of limitations related to those legal remedies, information about any services that may be available to the victim, such as school counseling, peer advising, or any nursing services through the school or school district, as well as community-based services and resources, information regarding privacy rights of the student and victims. And finally, victims will be provided with information on whether or not a violation of the sexual harassment policy has occurred. As I've worked on this bill over the past several months, I've come to realize that the many facets of this issue are much larger than the scope of this bill can address in a short session. However, HB 4150A is a concrete first step to providing school districts with a roadmap for how sexual harassment investigations should be conducted while victims and their families have basic information on what to expect from that process. I'd like to thank the Attorney General Sexual Assault Task Force, Oregon Law Center, OEA, OSBA, COSA, Clackamas Women's Services, the Oregon Student Association, and Oregon Department of Education for all the work that they've put into this to just get us to this point, and all the brave students who have brought their stories forward to shine a light on this widespread problem. In particular, I'd like to thank Tyler Miller and his parents for pursuing justice and identifying the barriers that exist for student victims seeking to find resolution and healing. This bill passed out of House Judiciary and on the House floor with unanimous support, and I would respectfully urge your aye vote on HB 4150A.
Thank you very much. Senator Gelser, do you want to say anything at this time, or just?
I think yeah. She said it all. Thank you for all of your work and to the family that came forward, especially the young man who was willing to speak up. It takes a lot of courage.
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Any questions for this witness? Thank you very much.
Yeah.
So with that, we're going to invite Ricardo Jean, Lori Wimmer, Sorgen Metzger.
Chair Oblin,
an amazing panel to see all together.
Chair Oblin, Vice Chair Linthica, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ricardo Lujan Valerio, and I am the legislative director for the Oregon Student Association. I'll keep this brief since I know you have a pretty time-sensitive agenda, but I do want to express the support from the Oregon Student Association for House Bill 4150A. Oftentimes, our leaders within our higher education organization see K-12 issues as a priority, since we are we've gone through that process, and we want to make sure that we as leaders support our K-12 counterparts as much as we can. This bill, as the representative has stated, does not do everything necessary and needed for students to be able to find solutions to sexual harassment in the K-12 system, but it does allow the conversation to start, and it allows progress to move forward. We are excited that this bill got introduced, especially when we often find ourselves in instances where students are conflicted of whether reporting this kind of behavior to the authorities or to a school district. Oftentimes, they find themselves wondering if it's going to lead to further pain or a resolution. So we welcome this bill, and we are in full support of it.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. For your record, Lori Wimmer representing Oregon Education Association. And we, too, support the bill as amended. We worked with Representative Salinas and her staff since October, I believe, on perfecting what we thought was good language, but it needed some work. And I would say that the representative and her staff offer us the gold standard of what collaboration looks like in refining legislative concepts to be really workable. And we appreciate the transparency of the process for both students and staff, and yet the balance of protections for their FERPA rights and also for personnel file rights. And so for all of those reasons, we can recommend the bill before you today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin and members of the committee. My name is Soren Metzger, and I'm here today on behalf of the 22,000 classified folks represented by the Oregon School Employees Association. We are here in support of House Bill 4150A. I also would like to thank Lori Wimmer for all of her hard work on this bill, and the representative and the other chief sponsors. Thank you. I'm not going to detail what it actually does because you've already heard that, so I will just add that you all probably know this, and I just want to remind you that staff and students in the K-12 education system are not immune to the issues that you're hearing about as it relates to sexual harassment. Also, I think this bill is really very important because it allows for the healing of the victims with this access to information and necessary supports, and then ultimately closure so that, you know, folks, victims can move on. So that being said, we look forward to the continued work on this issue, and we urge the committee support. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Seeing none, thank you very much. Is there anyone else that would like to speak to this particular issue or forever hold your peace? Okay, so with that, we're going to close the public hearing and open a work session. We'll do it at the same time. And open a work session on House Bill, what was that again? 4150A. Senator Lithicum.
Senator Roblin, I would move House Bill 4150A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Lithicum moves House Bill 4150A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? Motion passes, and we'll have Senator Gelser carried. Thank you. So we'll close our work session, and we'll open a...
Stand at ease until Rip Hernandez gets here.
We're going to stand at ease, so we'll turn the blue light off until Representative Hernandez gets here. We should be here shortly. Reconvene our Senate Education Committee, and we'll have a short explanation of the bill, and then we'll let Representative Hernandez give us the update.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, House Bill 4141A requires each public university to have an advisory body to the university president that provides advice on tuition and mandatory enrollment fees for the upcoming academic year for the president's recommendations to the governing board. The bill specifies advisory body membership, requires public universities to establish a process to form the advisory board and its membership, create a written document describing the role and relationships of the advisory body, ensure the advisory body receives certain budget trainings, provide the advisory body with certain plans, and ensure that the process of establishing tuition and mandatory enrollment fees is described on the university website. The bill requires the advisory body to document its consideration of whether historically underserved students will be better served under different tuition and mandatory enrollment fee scenarios, provide meaningful opportunities for members of the recognized student government and other enrolled students to participate in the process and deliberations, and to provide a written report to the university president that sets forth the recommendations, deliberations, and observations of the advisory body regarding tuition and mandatory enrollment fees for the next academic year, including any minority reports. The bill requires the governing board to receive and consider all advisory body written reports and minority reports, and requires public universities to provide all advisory body written reports, including minority reports, and any other information or materials requested by the Oregon Higher Education Coordinating Commission if the institution requests that the HEC approve an increase in tuition and mandatory enrollment fees of more than 5%. The bill declares an emergency effective on passage. The A8 amendment narrows the bill to considerations of resident tuition and mandatory enrollment fees. It defines resident tuition and mandatory enrollment fees as the tuition and mandatory enrollment fees for undergraduate students who are enrolled in a degree program and who have established residency in Oregon. It adds a requirement that the advisory body document its consideration of the impact of its recommendations on the mission of the public university.
Very good.
Chair Roblin, Vice Chair Linthica, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Diego Hernandez. I'm a state representative for House District 47, representing East Portland. I was on revenue committees. We had to stand at ease too, so I can come here. So I appreciate that you all did the same. You know, it's my privilege to bring this bill before you. I first want to appreciate the Oregon Student Association and seven universities for coming together and working together in collaboration to come up with the solution with a bill that I think does three things. One, it gives students a voice. It allows for information in a transparent way for that advisory committee. But two, also creates an accountability component of this advisory committee. I think the SMS did a really good job explaining the details of the bill, including of the amendment. So I won't go too much into detail on that, but we wanted to set a standard for how student participation, at least at a minimum, should look like around each of the seven university governing bodies. And we believe that this bill does that in a way that students and universities agree, and also in a way that allows for the accountability component to be there. I truly do believe that students are the best folks to hold our institutions accountable for how they spend their money. They're the ones who pay the tuition. They're the ones most impacted by those decisions. And this includes them at the table and their voice to be heard. So with that, I'll leave it there. I'll take any questions if you all have any.
Any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. And go spend money or whatever you're going to do in the other committee.
raise money.
Oh, okay. I'll be back later
for 4044.
Okay. So with that, we'll have Ricardo Lujan Valerio and Hans Bernard.
Chair Roblin, Vice Chair Linthica, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ricardo Lujan Valerio, and I'm the legislative director for the Oregon Student Association. We are happy to be at this point now for this bill, House Bill 4141, where all stakeholders in higher education are in agreement on the language that you have before you. We do have a Dash 8 amendment on the table as well that all parties are also in agreement with. This amendment was produced due to the conversations that happened on the House side and from recommendations both from the universities as well as committee members. It passed the committee unanimously and got a House floor vote of 57-2. We were really happy to be able to work this bill with multiple parties and find ourselves now in a position where the relationships from institutions and students has been fostered and really does express the work and the hard work that has been done for all of the parties on this bill. So I urge this committee to vote in favor of House Bill 4141 with the Dash 8 amendments and also to support it on the Senate floor. Thank you.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, Hans Bernard with the University of Oregon here today on behalf of all the seven public universities. I think Ricardo summed it up very well. We very much appreciate the work of Representative Hernandez and the Students Association and the many countless hours of conversations that went into crafting the bill and the Dash 8 amendment. We would encourage your adoption of the amendment and support the bill. Again, we very much appreciate the work of the sponsor and the Students Association in working with the universities to get the bill in the position it is in today. Thanks.
So, any questions of these witnesses? Okay. Okay. Yes, Senator.
Just one simple question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That, as far as you're concerned, how will this bill change what you're doing now?
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Senator Bentz. I think what this bill will do is create a unified standard across the campuses. There are provisions in the bill, for example, that require that all tuition materials be posted and available to students online. Today, that's a practice that some institutions do, but not all of us do. So I think it will create a baseline of participation. It will set out a clear process for the students and the boards of trustees on the campus. As we had the conversation on the House side, I don't think this bill, and I think it's important for all of us to recognize this bill will not solve college affordability, but it will ensure that students have a voice in the process and that voice is uniform across all seven campuses.
And the follow-up. The word in here is considers. The boards have to consider. What's that mean to you?
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Senator Bentz, the way that the structure of the bill is that the the committee charged with setting a recommendation for tuition would provide that recommendation to the president. The president then has the responsibility of forwarding a recommendation on tuition to the Board of Trustees. I think, for example, on the University of Oregon's campus last week or 2 weeks ago, our Tuition and Fee Advisory Board recommended an undergraduate tuition increase of 2.4%. Our president and provost spent several weeks taking comment from the university community, weighing that, considering it, and then sending it on to the Board of Trustees. In certain circumstances, I know there has been times when that body and the president have differed and there has been a different recommendation, but I think it creates a foundational basis for the conversation at the Board of Trustees.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Yes, Senator Lithgow.
At the technical level, is the dash 8 in the A engrossed or does the dash 8 need to be adopted?
We have to adopt it.
Okay.
Yeah, it was the last minute stuff that they got before they had to move it out of the committee to the floor. And so they were in the process of getting it done. Didn't get it done until afterwards. Okay. Any other discussion? We've had this happen in a couple other bills, I think one last session, that we had to wait till we got over here to make the final decision. So appreciate the work. They know they have a big task. Once it gets across our floor, it's got to go over and get concurred with, and we'll hope that all happens. So with that, thank you very much. Is there anyone else that wishes to talk to 4141A? Seeing no one, we're going to close our public hearing on 4141A, and we're going to open a work session on 4141A. Senator Lithicum.
Chair Roblin, I would like to move the dash A8 amendment to the House Bill 4141A.
Senator Lithicum moves the dash A8 amendment to House Bill 4141A. Is there any discussion? Yes.
Mr. Chair, I just want to say, first of all, I want to express gratitude for all those who worked on this. It had the potential to really tear the community apart, but I think everyone found, some consistent agreement on it. And, you know, I think this is an important step in the saga of higher ed governance, here in the state. You know, it used to be that these decisions were made by the State Board of Higher Education, and we decided to devolve a lot of that authority to the individual campuses with their governing boards. But, you know, we had an expectation that there would be consistency and, underneath the 5% increase, it was entirely up to the institution. We need to make sure that that involves the entire community and it's done in a very public way, and there's an opportunity for individuals who disagree with recommendations to have minority reports, which can then be entertained by the board, so that the board's making their decision in full confidence that they've gotten all the facts. And I think this is a great thing, so I'm happy to support it.
Any other discussion? Is there any opposition? This is the dash A8, right? That we're still on?
Correct.
Okay. Is there any other discussion? Any opposition? So moved. Senator Lithicum.
Chair Roblin, I move House Bill 4141-A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Lithgow moves House Bill 4141-A as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? So moved. So we do have a rule that says the only the people that ask the questions or make the last comment get to carry the bill. So Senator Dembro, thank you for volunteering. So with that, we're going to close the work session on 4141A. He saved you, by the way.
No, no, that was after him.
Oh, that's right. Oh, okay. So with that, we close the work session. We're going to open a public hearing and possible work session. I'll open them both at the same time with respect to 4044A. And Rep. Helfrich is here. Yes. And are you on this one too? Yeah. And so come on all up. We got lots of reps. I guess there are more than a few. So we'll save this. Okay, very good. Thank you. With that, whoever wants to begin, you have my hope that one of you will start. Right. Oh, wait, we should probably hear about this. I'm sorry. We'll hear about this. So you'll know what you're talking about. We wanted to make sure you have all that you need.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, House Bill 4044A requires the Chief Education Office to conduct a study on the recruitment, retention, mentoring, and professional development of educators who serve at-risk students in preschool through grade 12. The bill defines student groups at risk for experiencing an achievement gap as diverse, enrolled in schools that rank low in performance, enrolled in alternative education programs, enrolled in English language learner programs, enrolled in early childhood special education services or special education services, and enrolled in talented and gifted programs. The bill requires the Chief Education Office to review programs supporting educators in education service districts and in school districts, requires identification of effective programs in improving recruitment, retention, mentoring, and professional development of educators. It requires the identification of effective or efficient programs for educators and requires that a report be submitted to the Legislative Assembly before June 30th, 2019. The bill is repealed on June 30th, 2019 and is effective on the 91st day after sine die.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin, Vice Chair Lithgow, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jeff Helfrich. I'm the representative for House District 52. I'm the chief co-sponsor for House Bill 4044A, and committee member Thompson is also the chief co-sponsor. This bill also is sponsored by Representative Hernandez, Solomon, and Bynum. Thank you for the opportunity to present House Bill 4044A, a bill to study the recruitment, retention, mentoring, and professional development of educators who serve students in public schools, preschool through grade 12, who may be at risk for experiencing an achievement gap. As I said in previous testimony, children are our greatest natural resource. Having quality, supported educators of our children is critical to the development and fostering success of this natural resource. This bill is the result of my chief of staff, Dr. Brandy Etheridge, who holds a PhD in education, having discussions with educators and high-level administrators in Hood River, the Multnomah County Education Service District, and the Clackamas Education Service District. As you read and hear the testimony to the House Committee on Education, House Bill 4044A builds on aligning with Senate Bill 755 and the resulting annual educator report, equity report, the Governor's Council on Educator Advancement, Oregon Every Student Succeeds Act, or ESSA, plan, and the 2018 Teaching, Empowering, Leading, and Learning, or TEL, Oregon Survey, which opened February 1st and closes this Wednesday, February 28th. We ask that you hear the testimonies today that speak to the importance and potential positive impact of this bill to our educators and our children of our state.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be
quick. So the two males still left. The one go first. I
appreciate it. I was just going to be very brief. That way they can have
as much time as they want. Okay.
Chair Roblin, for the record. You're welcome. Chair Roblin, for the record, my name is David Hernandez, State Representative for House District 47, East Portland. And I am here before you in support of this bill. On OLIS, there's testimony in the meeting materials from my superintendent and school board in which I serve, the Reynolds School District, also stating why this bill is very important in terms of what we need to know for my school district to be able to better retain our teachers who we've seen transitioning more so than we would like. And obviously, there's a lot of poverty and issues out there, and we're looking to figure out ways to best retain teachers. And I think this bill is a step towards getting us the information we need to do that. So that, with that, I'll wrap up.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin, Vice Chair Lithcom, and members of the Senate Education Committee. For the record, my name is Janine Salmon. I'm the state representative for areas that represent House District 30. I'm sorry, I represent Banks, North Plains, Hillsboro, and Beaverton. I am here today testifying in support of House Bill 4044A, which studies recruitment, retention, mentoring, and professional development of educators who are serving students who may be at risk for experiencing achievement gap issues. I think this bill is of extreme importance because I have seen firsthand, as a mom of new teachers, how crucial solid recruitment, retention, good mentoring, and challenging professional development can be to support our educators on the front line. My son and daughter-in-law are second and third year teachers in the Willamette Valley area and have spoken highly of the importance of having a mentor teacher. And my daughter-in-law has shared examples of how her mentor teacher last year helped her with lesson plans to reach her struggling students in math. My son has shared how important it is to have someone to go to with his questions, who have experienced what he is going through, to get his questions answered in a way that makes sense to the group of kids that he's working with. And in his case, it's as a special education teacher. It is for these reasons and many others that I am supporting this bill. I believe that recruitment, retention, mentoring, and professional development go hand in hand. We must look at ways that we can get more of these opportunities into schools that are serving our struggling students so that we may retain solid teachers that can give expertise with time and then become a mentor to others. We all weren't experts being a first year legislator, and we relied on those that had worn these shoes before us to provide their perspective and to lend their experience. Our educators deserve the same. I am hopeful this bill will provide solid feedback to our Joint Committee on Student Success and the work they have been charged to do. I urge you to support this piece of legislation so that we can continue on this path in 2019. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Janelle Bynum, and I represent House District 51. Thank you so much for hearing my testimony today. One of my most cherished roles as a state representative is meeting with the young people in our community. And as a mom of four, I know that the true future of our society rests with our children. And I also recognize that one of the most important factors in my children's success outside of their family is their education. But, you know, all of our children are not receiving the same levels of instruction or educational benefit throughout the community. And if you want to look at studies, they've identified achievement gaps between racial and ethnic minorities, English language learners, students with disabilities, boys and girls, I can attest to that firsthand, and students from low-income families. And the reasons for these gaps are numerous. Most commonly, we see it as performance on tests, whether it's statewide tests or even SAT. Access to key opportunities, which looks like advanced mathematics, physics, higher education. One good example is access to a group called like Saturday Academy. Those of you who are in the Portland area, on the Beaverton side, you have great access. On the east side, we have very little access. And those are the things that help propel kids forward. We also have measurements in the attainment of high school diplomas, college degrees, and employment. So those are a few of the ways that we're seeing the disparities show up. Studies have also shown that this achievement gap is hampering our economy. For example, one study found that the 2008 GDP would have been $310 billion to $525 billion higher if our country had closed at least the racial achievement gap, and $400 billion to $670 billion higher if we had at least closed the income achievement gap. So we know that Oregon classrooms today are more racially, ethnically, and economically diverse than ever before, and we're striving to increase access for children with disabilities and for students for whom English is not their first language. However, even if you look at that, only 10% of culturally or linguistically diverse teachers in Oregon, with only that number, there are few opportunities for most students to be educated by individuals who look like them or have similar life experiences. So as an African American, I think my children have had two African American teachers, and I have a 16-year-old, a 14-year-old, a 9-year-old, and a 7-year-old. They've had the fortunate experience of having, I think, maybe three teachers who spoke Spanish as a first language, and that's going through a bilingual program, but they've never had a real opportunity to have a teacher that understands exactly the life that they lead at home. So this bill is designed to help ferret out the causes of the gaps in achievement and to study recruiting, retaining, mentoring, and developing educators that are able to reverse this unsettling trend. The bill commissions a study to identify the flaws and gaps in our system that make it difficult for schools to recruit and retain teachers from populations historically affected by a gap in achievement. The bill will also identify and study existing programs, schools, and districts who have shown the ability to effectively and efficiently recruit teachers as well. So this is the ultimate goal of the bill, is to take a deep dive and look and see what happens when you are able to retain teachers and recruit teachers that address the needs of the students at hand. I urge your aye vote on the bill and welcome any questions for the panel.
Any questions for this group? Senator Denver.
Yeah, thanks, Ms. Chair. And this doesn't mean I have to carry the bill, right? But I do have a...
None of them are carrying.
I'm wondering, and this may be a question for you as the co-chair of the Student Success Task Force, how you see this work feeding into the work that you all are doing or will be doing for the next year.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that was part of the intention or if you all have talked about that.
You want to say anything before I speak? It's up to you. Yes.
When this was a legislative concept, we were working on this before the committee started and talked with Dr. Rosselli, who's from the Chief Education Office, and she said the data that would be from the Student Success Committee would help with this, moving it forward.
We, and from my perspective, we anticipate that the questions about having kids in front of classrooms that look like the kids sitting in the classrooms is really an important part of the conversation we're going to go. We will be looking at different institutions and when we go out on site visits that are trying to do that. So we anticipate that the Chief Education Office will be a major part of where we get information from. So any of the studies that they have are going to be a part of the conversation that we have. And I think it's really important that we continue to try to figure out how do we answer that question about what will make more students successful. And it's pretty clear from the data out there that this is one thing that helps make kids more successful. It isn't the only answer, but it is certainly one of the answers. And I would contend that when it comes to making sure that those people get mentored and helped. I mean, the worst part of education is keeping people around and getting really well-qualified people there in the first place. And I will tell you that when it comes to getting people of color in the education realm, they get recruited from a lot of other places. There's a lot of people looking at this issue with respect to racial diversity in their own environments because industry has found that the more diverse it is, the more likely they are to succeed. So you start getting someone doing really well, and all of a sudden they start getting offers from other places. It's a frustrating conversation that we have to continue to have. So I think it will be a part of it. And just so you know, me answering your question does not mean that I was the last one to speak.
Good.
So you can go on again.
Yeah, well, I do have another question. You can choose to get involved or not, Chair. You know, I hope that Dr. Roselli or whoever is doing this study pays close attention to the Portland Teachers Program in Portland. That's a cooperative arrangement between Portland Community College and Portland State University and Portland Public Schools, where it's a sort of it's a pipeline for students of color, where they start at the community college, then transfer to Portland State for their bachelor's and master's degrees, and then they go into Portland Public Schools. And I think there may be some other school districts, too, that are partnering. And they continue to maintain a relationship with the program so that as they're going through those difficult first couple of years, they're getting that sort of peer support. And I tend to go to their graduations every year, you know, where you have these students who started as community college students, and now they're graduating with their master's degrees. And all of the, or it seems like all of the former graduates show up for this big event. And it's really, it's heartwarming. I've always felt that this is something that needs to, a model that really needs to be replicated around the state. So just want to put that on the record.
Yes, Senator Bonham. Representative Bonham.
Mr. Chair, one thing I wanted to also mention was that as we're looking at the first-line educator disparities, we also need to look at the administrative portion, because a good principal can help or hurt the whole process, or a good administrator, I would say. And because we don't have very robust ranks of administrators of color or from these groups, that also plays into it. And those administrators also do not have very many rights when it comes to protections, workforce types of protections. So you have teachers who have labor protections, but you don't have administrators. So all that has to happen is you get, you know, maybe you get 10 or 12, let's just say, administrators of color in a school district, five of them leave. It is very difficult to replace them. It is very difficult to protect them so that they can mentor and bring more teachers up. So I hope that that would also be on the record as being an area of interest that we want to look at. So.
Yes.
Chair Roblin. Do I have to say my name again? No. Representative Fernandez.
No, you don't.
Just to add, so this is a conversation that happens not only in the school district that I serve, but the other school districts that I represent, Park Rose, Centennial, and David Douglas, where they're looking to hire and want to hire more multilingual, multicultural teachers who have lived experience similar to the students that they serve. And similarly to my school district, every year where we go through our openings and we see who we hired and who we didn't, it's kind of disheartening. So we're looking for solutions, and I think I serve on the Student Success Joint Committee, and I know there's going to be many questions that we're going to be trying to look at in terms of student success, one of them being how do we start to create a pipeline of educators that really would serve the best needs of our students. And so this, I think it's complementary, because we're going to look for that data. We're going to need that data, and this will help us get that information.
Yeah, and I want to compliment you on mentioning the issue with administrators. The reality is, just like students, it's nice to see other people look like them in those positions, and there aren't many, so it makes it harder to really aspire to that position without thinking that there's going to be someone that's going to give a handout to help up. And we hope that we get that encouragement from lots of different people, but it's oftentimes more really important internally for people to have that. So I appreciate that comment, and hopefully we can find those people that can come to that. Any other questions for this group? Thank you very much. With that, we'll call up Hilda Roselli. I think that is the only other person we have on. If there's anybody else that really wants to come up, Hilda always likes people to sit with her. If you would like to come up, now is your time. Okay. I guess not, Hilda. Sorry.
I'm all alone. So Chair Roblin and Vice Chair Senator Linthicum and members of the Senate Education Committee. For the record, my name is Hilda Rosselli, and I serve as a policy director in the Chief Education Office. And I just, oh, they've left, but before they left, I really wanted to just acknowledge how exciting it is to hear the ability of our legislative body understand the nuances and complexities of this issue. Those of you who know that I develop a legislative report for you all every single year, and this will be my fifth year of developing it, just focused on the racial and linguistic diversity of educators, know that we've tried to highlight in that report that it's not just about recruitment, it's not just about preparation, it's about the hiring practices, it's about workload issues, it's about mentoring, professional learning, and career advancement. And the report that I give you all, hasn't been a study as much as it's been a report on the data. We track 31 of the most diverse school districts and can give you, you know, you'll see in the documents that, you know, the progress of those districts and the gap that still exists between the diversity of the students and the diversity of the workforce. But here's what's different. I just came from a meeting last week, Thursday, in which for the first time we brought members of the statewide equity planning groups together. And because we had read their plans and realized that many of them had goals or at least ideas that they wanted to see pursued around the educator workforce, but nobody had ever brought all of those groups together. And 27 people sat in a room for 2.5 hours and unanimously said, we need to meet again because we really need to nail down how we collectively impact policies in this area. Second thing I wanted to let you know is that March 12th, we're convening an event that will bring together our ed prep programs that produce both teachers and administrators and our district supervisors, superintendents, HR directors, to really have that dialogue about the broader picture of our workforce needs. We are facing a grain of the workforce, and we know that we don't just have the need to recruit more diverse educators and retain them, but we really have to figure out how to address the needs of rural and remote communities that are finding it incredibly difficult to, first of all, attract educators and then keep them there. Secondly, we know we have some high need areas such as CTE. Measure 98 is going to call for more CTE teachers, as well as our STEM areas and special education. We are wholeheartedly supportive of this bill. And as Senator Roblin knows, the Educator Advancement Council is geared to really hone in and to follow with some policies and recommendations to you for the 19th session based on the findings of this report. So I didn't even need to read my testimony because the previous legislators did such a wonderful job, but I'd be glad to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So since this is the last bill, right, of this session for us, I think I'll change my order of who gets to carry. And we'll probably have the quietest person on this dais get to carry that bill. Senator Thompson, are you willing to carry this bill?
Well, if we pass it.
If we pass it?
Yeah.
Okay. Just wanted to have that conversation. Because he's been down there quietly working, but I know was on this bill and was on some others. So I just want to say thanks to the whole committee as well. So with that, Senator Linthicum. Oh, wait. We opened a work session to begin with.
It's a public hearing / work session.
Yep. And it was open. So I would take a motion.
Well, now I'm hesitating a little if Chuck is going to carry it. Never mind. Okay. Chair Roblin, I'd like to move House Bill 4044-A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Lithgow moves House Bill 4044-A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? Seeing none. It passes. We will have Senator Thompson carry.
Thanks.
With that, we'll close our
public hearing work session on 4044A. And just a few comments. I just want to say thank you to everybody that served on this committee. It's been a really great opportunity for me to get to know more of you. I was, when it came up, and it was a little larger than others, than I've had in the past. It was interesting, but it's been a really good experience, and I appreciate all of your work. Yes, thank you. We are having a meeting on Wednesday. Two things coming up. Number one, we are going to have a public hearing on class size issue. And number two, we will hear a little bit more about some issues with regard to those students that have not been successful and how do we get them re-engaged, so a re-engagement conversation. And we have some interesting people that want to come. If we can work it out, we even have some people from Intel. Is that what it is? No, from Microsoft.
And Tacoma.
And Tacoma.
And Tacoma.
This is the people from Tacoma and things that are happening. So I look forward to all of that. Any comments by the rest of the committee before we adjourn for this regular part of the session? Okay. So with that, with that, we're going to adjourn the Senate Education Committee for today, and we'll see you all back on Wednesday.
All right, we're in the dinner room.
We're in, almost.